across the country and around the world, this is TalkZone.com, the best in Internet talk radio. Now more of the Wild About Pets radio show on TalkZone.com. Once again, here's Susan Frank.
Welcome back to the show and my discussion with my guest, Ed Fritz, who's the campaign specialist for the Pit Bulls Saving America's Dog campaign, which is a campaign of the Best Friends Animal Society. You can see photographs of pit bulls and the animals and other things that we're going to be talking about today by clicking the purple Look While You Listen button that you see on the Talk Zone Wild About Pets show page. That will take you to my website, wildaboutpets.net. You can also access it all the time through that. And it is October 9th. We are streaming live here in the broadcast studio. You can call in and ask Ed a question about pit bulls. You can call 1-888-463-6748. Again, that's 888-463-6748. So we are talking about some of the myths and facts about pit bulls. So Ed, what are some of the myths that you hear the most? Maybe, you know, two of the biggest ones that you want to make sure that people understand, you know, is not facts about pit bulls.
Okay. Well, there are several that we hear. Probably the most common ones and the ones that, concern me the most isn't so much the locking jaw, which is a complete myth. And I mean, they've done studies and tests and there's nothing about the dog pit bull body that's any different than any other dog canine. But one thing that you tend to hear is that pit bulls attack without warning, or pit bulls will, turn on their owners. And those are myths. When dogs are going to attack, they do a lot beforehand. Like most mammals, they really don't want to engage in something of their own volition that might injure them, right?
Mm-hmm.
People are the same way in general. So they signal like other dogs. Now, if you have a dog that, you know, has a cropped tail, doesn't have a tail, it's cropped ears, so it doesn't really have ears, and that kind of thing, it's going to be harder to read those signals because the tail and the ears are very visual, very simple signals. But as you get to learn about dogs, and especially with your own dog, watching your dog, observing your dog, looking at how his body reacts, you can see the kind of mood your dog is in, or, you know, if the dog is being bothered by something. So they do signal. We just, as people, have to just take a minute, slow down, and be a little bit attentive. And we can get that. Your body will tell you, I'm in danger, and you should listen to your body.
Mm-hmm.
Dog telling you something. Whether or not you can say, well, I could see by his tail being stiff or the hair on the nape of his neck and his, you know, hips are is rising or his ears are, you know, cocked forward. You know, you don't really need to know all that stuff. You need to listen to your body that says, I'm in danger.
Okay.
Back away. You know, so they do give warnings. They do give body signals. And dogs don't turn on their owners. That is, you know, there's, to use the phrase, you know, the straw that broke the camel's back, right? There's things leading up to that, and at some point something happened and the dog took action.
Mm-hmm.
Not only that, you know, what Karen DeLeese from the National Canine Research Council, she's probably done the most in-depth study in these books about these attacks, starting with fatalities and into severe bite attacks. I haven't seen anything more in-depth or verifiable. And she's not found one case of a single neutered household pet pit bull that has ever killed anyone. So the spay-neuter really does play into that. It takes the edge off the dogs that you can actually teach them. And if, you know, dogs are only dangerous as their owners allow them to be.
Right, right.
Like those of us with dogs, we know what their behaviors are. You know, we know that maybe they jump up, maybe they're not the best behaved, but they behave well enough that they're our companions, and we put up with that, and that's fine with us.
Well, Ed, now I know it's hard to speculate on what has happened or what the history of some of the dogs that, you know, we have heard in the news and I suppose were verified that did attack. Is there anything, overall statement that you could make to address the issue of what may have been behind the pit bulls that, let's say, someone was walking and the dog got out of control and wound up injuring someone? Because I want to make sure during this show where I am trying to break some of the inaccurate ideas of pit bulls and help them and help people understand that they're really can be very gentle, loving, affectionate, you know, family pets. I don't want to diminish at all or belittle the suffering and the people who have been hurt and injured by the dogs. Can we say what's really kind of behind sometimes when these dogs do lash out?
Well, absolutely, Susan. I'm glad you brought it up because it is difficult, especially in the world of animal welfare and when we're dealing with these dogs. You know, when we say that it's an ownership issue, it's, you know, there are things that owners can take to prevent situations like that. But I really don't want to make it sound like, you know, because there are some, you know, really loving people whose dogs have, for one thing or another, done something to get them in trouble. And, you know, in animal welfare, we get accused of, you know, to defend the dog, we're blaming these victims.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to belittle that at all. I mean, some of these things are really horrible, and the families go through some very traumatic experiences. And
yes,
that's really important, and we really want to avoid that. So it is an owner issue, but that's not to say that there are bad people doing bad things. I mean, a lot of times it's things we learn or we don't know.
Right,
you know,
sure.
Ignorance is an insult. It's just an acknowledgement that there are things we don't know. You know, once we learn those things, we got hold of it. You know, so we learn.
Okay, so you're referring to some of the training and some of responsible dog ownership.
Absolutely. I mean,
okay,
there are things that I've learned working for Best Friends that I didn't realize. A lot of times when we have dogs that are doing things that we don't, that we either perceive as bad behavior or just the way we don't want our dog to behave, when we handle that, a lot of times we're inadvertently reinforcing that behavior. And I think that's the case a lot of times in these situations where someone's walking by a yard. A lot of dogs naturally will want to, you know, they can be territorial, and they'll want to kind of protect their family, you know, where they live, their food, those kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
How we teach that dog how to handle those situations, you know, and a lot of good-intended people inadvertently reinforce behavior that will lead to a dog biting a stranger walking across.
Okay.
And we can avoid that, and the first step is spay-neuter.
Okay. There is speaking of myths, there is a great website that I came across, of course, while preparing for the show, called badrap.org. It's www.badrap.org, and there is a link on my webpage that I'll refer to later, but it has a great number of pages on what they call the monster myths behind pit bulls, and they go into some really good information and details, and all the websites that I do list on my bottom of the page of photos are ones that I actually was reading, and I highly recommend, because there's so much more, obviously, you know, Ed, that we could be saying about every kind of topic we're mentioning here than we can, you know, cover in our conversation today, but I highly will encourage everyone to read much more detail about, you know, what we're talking about. But Ed, okay, so let's talk a little bit about the history of pit bulls. And I have to say, myself, I remember a time, I can't even say, you know, maybe one or two decades ago, that I never heard anything bad about pit bulls. And then all of a sudden, it seems like we are inundated with, you know, story after story. And, you know, you hear it's a breed that's used for fighting because of how vicious they are, and they're attacking here and there. And it seemed, you know, to be something that, you know, just happened over some time. And in the research I was doing, I realized that going way back through history, and you can talk about this when we get into your campaign, pit bulls were like this highly esteemed dog on the cover of, you know, famous popular magazines and rescue dogs, and our presidents had them, and television shows and movies featured them, and they were America's pet. And now, you know, we are fearful and we, you know, denigrate this dog. So Ed, you know, kind of in a nutshell, what happened?
Well, you know, it's true. I mean, when these dogs, you know, there is kind of a sordid history. I mean, the word pit bull, you know, didn't come out of nowhere, and it didn't come from loving, compassionate people either. There was a desire and a motivation and a whole culture that exists in America, and it has been for, you know, 100 years. And it's this animal cruelty, fighting animals against each other. And that's the pit. They, you know, once it started becoming illegal or shunned by society, they went underground and built these little pits and had them go. And they will say that they bred these dogs to be champions. But there's a myth there, too. You know, that's an intent of, you know, kind of knucklehead people that are dangerous people. That's what they want. But in order for them to get that, they have to kill puppy after puppy after puppy after puppy to do that. And really, the whole, that whole thing about these animals being popular for aggression isn't because they're born that way. It's because they work very hard training them that way and using a lot of drugs, stimulants, and that kind of thing to get them to do that.
Oh, I never even knew that drugs were involved in this at all.
Mm. Oh, my God, in every case. And it's it's artificial. And, you know, the advocates on that side of the fence, there, it's all hubris, you know, their own self-pride. So it really has nothing to do with the dog. They're complete victims in this whole thing. And so that was underground even for the last 100 years. And, you know, and they were the family, America's dog. I mean, the Little Rascals, you know, Petey, you know, the RCA dog, Buster Brown, and Helen Keller had one. Teddy Roosevelt had one. They were the family's dog. What happened? Well, from what I'm understanding is, coming out of the underground in the, you know, mostly in the southern states, but right now it's nationwide. It doesn't really matter. And crosses racial lines, it's the whole thing. But, you know, it was underground in the deep south for a long time. And then what happened was a lot of our urban gang culture got a hold of these dogs. So it started to be seen on the street.
Okay, you know what, Ed, I'm just going to interrupt you just for a moment. We're going to pick that up. But we do have a caller online right now. There's Leela who has a question, I think, about starting a campaign. Leela, welcome to the Wild About Pets show.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, well, go ahead with your question. Oh, Leela, sorry. Go ahead with your question.
I'll give you the short version of it.
Okay. Okay.
I was just told within the last couple of days, and it is verifiable, that the city that I live in, which is Elgin, Illinois, is seriously considering a pit bull ban, 100% ban. And if I did not get wind of this, I think this would have happened right under my nose. So I started to alert everyone I could. I got a fact information packet ready for the council meeting on the 14th of October, in which they give me 3 minutes to speak. I don't know what to do, and I need help. They don't want to hear from anybody that doesn't live in Elgin, and which I think is very close-minded. I invited the councilman to meet several pit bulls that are friendly and goofy and loving animals just like the rest of us know that they are, and he refused me. One of his messages to me, which I kept both, stated this councilman that his he did not intend on getting a full ban. He just wanted stricter laws on animals in general. And then I questioned him regarding this email that he had sent to a citizen stating that if this person is considering to live in Elgin, I'm sorry, to move to Elgin, Illinois and bring a pit bull, they might want to consider another town. And he is seriously considering a pit bull ban. when I questioned him about that email, which I do have, he then turned around and left me a message that stated he is considering a full pit bull ban on the information that he's gathering. I don't know if my 3 minutes and my information packet's going to, I don't know what it's going to do.
Okay, Ed, what kind of information or feedback can you offer Lila right now?
Well, one, Lila, I would encourage you to get a hold of me after the radio show, and I could talk to you a bit more. But, yes, I mean, my email box is burning up with yells and stuff. It has been all week. And what's interesting about Elgin is, you know, 3 years ago they did this, and they moved away from it. And then most recently, I think back in May or something, this came up again in Elgin, and we have our legislative analyst, who is probably one of the nation's foremost experts on this kind of in this subject, Leedy Van Cavage. She has been in touch with them, and you know, she's also part of the American Bar Association's Dangerous Dog Law Committee, and has a book out. Is a co-author of a book out for that. So Elgin has, the councilman has this book. They have we also have a fiscal impact statement that shows communities how much it,
I have that. I have that as part of my little information packet. I've got that printed up and
right.
I've got, yep, I know.
Yeah. They have that too. We were in touch with them earlier this year. The Elgin thing, it is kind of out of our hands. Most communities like this are most interested in hearing from their constituents, and they do get offended by the outside. So we have to be very careful about how we handle it. And that's basically because, you know, it's their community, and those citizens vote for them, and it's, you know, it's part of being in a free country. They have that privilege.
So, Ed, how can Lila, what should she do to get in contact with you after our show is over?
Well, you know, what's curious about this is I've heard this, that there's a very good authority that says that the council's trying to sneak this breed ban through, but I have an email here from Councilman John Pridge that says, you know, responsible owners will rejoice and rally around a forthcoming proposal.
Let me read to you.
What that means. I would get a hold of John Pridge and find out.
I did. I'm trying to tell you.
Is that the one that he wants to do discriminatory ordinances?
I've got two different emails two different messages from him.
Okay.
Which I saved.
You guys, you know
Let's
what?
Let's talk offline, Lila. Let's talk offline. And what we really need is we need citizens of Elgin to step in. And that's our only shot. And I can help support.
All right. You know what, Lila, my producer will give you that phone number. And so definitely it sounds like this is very current, and we'll be talking about this aspect also very shortly in our next segment, Ed, because this will be a perfect way to go into the whole idea of the campaign, Saving America's Dog. Because I understand you're dealing very much right now with legislation issues, aren't you?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. We'll be taking a break in a moment, and when we come back with our segment, we'll talk about the campaign from Best Friends Animal Society. Stay tuned. We'll be right back after this.